everybody, and thank you for joining us for the Preceptor Podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Ryan, and today we have with us Dr. Lindsay Sampson. Lindsay, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. As stated, my name is Lindsay Sampson, and I'm the Clinical Pharmacy Coordinator at Winslow Indian Healthcare Center in Arizona, which is an MCARE clinic with an urgent care, which is located right next to the Navajo Reservation. So those are the patients that we serve.
And Lindsay's a preceptor for Palm Beach Atlantic University, and I was talking to her a couple of weeks ago doing a virtual site visit. And we got to talking a little bit about the lingering respiratory symptoms that some patients who presented post-COVID infections. And I was wondering if you could kind of go over with the audience what you're starting to witness at your clinic with these patients.
So as a little background, our facility decided to set up a respiratory clinic in the wake of COVID last March to separate those patients presenting with respiratory symptoms in order to prevent them from mingling with all the other patients in our clinic. Those patients are then tested for COVID if warranted and treated. In order to prevent them from having to come to the pharmacy, we pre-packed several medications such as albuterol, ipratropium, diphenhydramine, Tylenol, ibuprofen, just to have over there. And initially, we did have a pharmacist in the clinic to dispense those meds in the council patients. But due to having to shift pharmacists to the COVID vaccination program, we don't have a pharmacist over there anymore, but we still have the pre-packed meds. The providers still enter patient orders in the electronic health record, so these are processed by pharmacists and reviewed, but a nurse or provider is the one who dispenses the medications to those patients. If they do have like an antibiotic or oral steroid, those medications are processed in the pharmacy and a pharmacist or technician runs those over and to dispense to the patient. So lately our pharmacists have noticed that many of these patients keep coming back to the respiratory clinic either continually since their COVID infection or weeks after the infection has resolved just to receive renewals on their respiratory meds, most notably albuterol. Some are even being prescribed antibiotics without relief. So since albuterol inhalers are pre-packed and labeled, many are given out prior to or concurrently with a pharmacist reviewing the order. So it's hard to catch the provider or speak with the patient before it's dispensed. When we have contacted providers about the overuse of albuterol, many don't see an issue with it since the person had COVID. We've had several patients get multiple albuterol inhalers in a month, and they're, 200 puffs in one albuterol inhaler, so it shouldn't be used up that quickly. Several patients, in addition to going to the respiratory clinic, they've also been requesting televisits with providers or calling in to see their PCP via his or her nurse coordinator to get their respiratory meds renewed without actually seeing a provider. Some providers will say, oh yeah, they're still suffering from COVID. They still have the cough. We'll just renew those medications, guaifenesin, Tylenol, albuterol. Also, many but not all of these patients have underlying asthma and they're not utilizing their controller medications such as Asthmanex and Dulera as indicated by their refill history or after discussion with the patient. So I spoke about this with one of our physicians, and he is also concerned. He noted that some patients are being treated with albuterol for things like postnasal drip and dry cough for which albuterol doesn't work. He is concerned that patients are not being evaluated or educated appropriately due to most visits being via telehealth or as an urgent care type visit. He noted that if a patient is using albuterol no more than 2 times per week, which means they have their asthma controlled, one albuterol inhaler should last an entire year. So if they're using it more often than that, they should really come in, see a provider to review their condition. And also, in addition to the lingering respiratory issues we're seeing, we've also seen a high rate of fatigue weeks and months after diagnosis among our patients and even coworkers who have contracted the virus.
I have a kind of a follow-up question to that. Are these solely in patients that had other respiratory issues previous? You mentioned asthma for quite a few. Or are you seeing these lingering issues in people that maybe didn't have a respiratory issue prior to their COVID diagnosis, and this is the first thing, or is it pre-existing stuff?
Both. Either they had underlying asthma or COPD, or they didn't. We're seeing it in both types of patients. I don't know the proportion, but we're seeing it in both types.
That's really interesting to know that they don't necessarily need to have that health history to start seeing these lingering effects. Okay, thanks.
So I've certainly heard a lot about COVID and read up on it, but I'm still of the mindset that this is really a short-term illness, right? You get it, you're ill, and then you recover. I know there are some lingering effects, but it sounds like there's more to it than even that. So from the evidence that you've been able to see, which I understand is probably limited, do you think that this is something that is going on in other populations outside of the population you treat?
Yeah, it seems so. I mean, it is common after a viral respiratory infection to have a lingering cough for weeks, but it's been noticed worldwide that many patients who have had COVID often continue to experience a variety of symptoms after they recovered from the initial infection. And these symptoms include fatigue, shortness of breath, brain fog, sleep disorders, GI disorders, psychiatric issues, neurological issues, cardiovascular issues, joint pain. And these symptoms can persist for months and can range from mild to incapacitating. So in late February, Dr. Fauci announced that these symptoms of long COVID would now be termed PASC, or post-acute sequelae of SARS-CoV-2 infection, PASC. And also the NIH has been granted $1.15 billion in funding over the course of 4 years to look at PASC, how it affects the population and how many people have it. They hope to learn how COVID may lead to these lasting symptoms and develop ways to treat or prevent these conditions. As an example, the results from the largest global study of long COVID based on survey results of over 3,700 long haulers, which is what they term these people with long COVID, in 56 countries show that 45%, nearly half, still required a reduced work schedule 6 months after developing these prolonged symptoms. And there are around 100, I've seen 100, 200 that they're including in some of these studies. And in that same study, about 22% were not working at all due to their health conditions after 6 months. There's also a study from the University of Washington that found that 30% of patients reported symptoms for as long as 9 months later.
I had no idea it was that long and that severe. Like, I feel like I get COVID reporting all the time and I had no idea about this.
So the NIH research studies, they'll be looking at the SARS-CoV-2 recovery cohorts, some that are already established and some that will be established. And they'll be looking at large data banks from resources such as electronic health records and health symptoms to gather all this data.
And just so I make sure I have my acronyms right, is PASC, did you say? What does that stand for again?
Post-acute sequelae of SARS-CoV-2 infection.
Thank you. Okay. I'll add that to my list.
Yeah.
Bring that up at conversation at the dinner table. Although, Ryan, your wife's a pharmacist, so maybe you could get that into a conversation at the dinner table.
Yeah, we could have that for sure.
I'm sure if we did chart reviews at our site, because we do have access to the electronic health record and notes, we may see people with other symptoms, psychological issues that are coming up, cardiovascular issues. I know there have been some VTEs and some patients that have had COVID, of course, but the ones I know of are patients that already had cardiovascular issues, but I'm sure there are more. So if a large scale chart review was done, I'm sure there a lot of these other symptoms would pop up at our clinic.
I mean, this is so rapidly evolving. I don't imagine, are there any guidelines out there yet on how to treat these people with these lingering COVID issues?
Not really. They're looking at it with, you know, the NIH studies, but and the NIH COVID guidelines do mention long COVID, but note that the incidence, natural history, and etiology of these symptoms are currently unknown, and that currently there's no case definition for post-acute COVID-19 syndrome, and no specific time frame has been established to define late sequelae of COVID-19. We do have the diagnosis and management of cough guidelines from the American College of Chest Physicians from 2006, and while they don't specifically mention COVID, they can offer some guidance. So they discuss different types of cough, and one of them is post-infectious cough, which is when a patient complains of cough that has been present following symptoms of an acute upper respiratory infection of at least 3 weeks, but not more than 8 weeks. And for that, the guidelines recommend considering a trial of ipratropium. If that doesn't work, then you can add inhaled corticosteroids if the cough persists. If that doesn't work, you can add a short course of oral prednisone and then even add on codeine or dextromethorphan later if you needed to. The same guidelines, a section was updated recently. A consensus statement came out in May 2020, updating the section of acute cough due to acute bronchitis in immunocompetent adult outpatients. It defines acute bronchitis as an acute lower respiratory tract infection manifested predominantly by cough with or without sputum, lasting no more than 3 weeks with no clinical or any recent radiographic evidence to suggest an alternative explanation like pneumonia or COPD exacerbation. So for this, the panel recommended that for immunocompetent adult outpatients with cough due to acute bronchitis, no routine antibiotic therapy, antiviral therapy, antitussives, inhaled beta agonists, inhaled anticholinergics, inhaled corticosteroids, oral NSAIDs, or other therapies until such treatments have been shown to be safe and effective at making cough less severe or resolve sooner. So nothing. Of course, if the bronchitis worsens, you need to reevaluate for differential diagnoses such as pneumonia or asthma exacerbation. Beyond that, I didn't see any specific guidance for management of cough beyond 8 weeks or so, unless they are found to have actual structural changes or damage to the lungs, which would lead to a diagnosis of chronic bronchitis or COPD.
So really, I mean, when you're pulling cough guidelines from 2006,
yeah,
that really talks to just how little we know to this point. So, I mean, taking a stab in the dark, I'd say almost literally in this case, what suggestions do you have from your experience to this point for other pharmacists who might be treating these patients or considering, you know, this this post-acute COVID syndrome for the first time?
So I'm not an expert on this and I'm still learning more. Lots of data keeps coming out, but just know that it's not rare to see patients coming back, continuing to come back and having symptoms of COVID or even developing new symptoms after COVID infection has gone away. And PASC has even been seen in patients who had an asymptomatic infection. They're coming back weeks later with these symptoms. And like always, ensure patients know how to use their inhalers properly before dispensing, if possible. I know it's hard to with COVID going on, but it's best to have the patients demonstrate use of the inhaler, if possible. You also want to continue to counsel those patients with asthma to use their controller medications as prescribed. Check their refill histories, discuss with the patient that these meds can help improve their symptoms over time, and call providers to recommend step-up therapy if necessary for these patients with asthma. And it seems like a great majority of patients that do have these controller medications don't want to use them. They just still keep overusing the albuterol inhaler because I guess it gives them kind of a quick fix. So it's hard to convince them to use the controller medication every day. Next, you want to counsel patients about side effects from the overuse of albuterol, such as tachycardia, anxiety, arrhythmias, hypertension, and desensitization to albuterol to get it to the point where it doesn't do anything. And finally, be a resource for providers for treatment recommendations. They haven't seen this either, so they're experiencing it along with you. This is especially important because many of these patients are being seen in acute care settings and not by their primary care provider, so they're not getting a thorough evaluation whenever they get seen. And it's hard to do that over a televisit. So counsel these patients to contact their PCP if they believe they may have PASC, and they may even end up needing to see a specialist for whatever condition that develops.
Well, Lindsay, I really appreciate you shedding some light onto this situation. And I know there's little light there still. We're going to be learning more week by week, month by month, but I really appreciate you bringing it to my attention and to our listeners' attention today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Pharmacy Preceptor Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please like or subscribe. We would love your feedback on topics that interest you and how we can make this podcast better. Please submit your comments to help us develop content that best serves you. Thanks, everyone.